This is Will's Band of the Week for October 4th, 2020. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Chris from Ron Swanson Studios.
Hey, here I am.
Nicholas from Backyard Barbecue Studios in Melbourne, Australia.
That's me, I'm here, yep.
And Jason from the Green Monster of Monona.
Yes, hello.
How's that? Did I name it appropriately?
Absolutely.
We got a full house.
Yeah.
We sure do.
We could babble on even worse. I mean, we could have, I think the prize, if we give a code word at the end, should be really be substantial. Now, it's hard to beat the Painted Blonde download codes, though. That was super cool. And we had three people claim them.
Yeah, it was fun. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. So
I really liked your interview last time with Yacht Club. He seemed like a pretty fun guy.
Yeah, that was pretty fun, wasn't it? Yeah, it was great because Jeremiah put that together and told me like 2 hours before we were going to start recording, hey, I lined up an interview with this guy. Like, all right, cool. Oh, it's pretty good.
It only sounded completely production. Professional.
Yeah.
It was good.
We had to call him on Skype using phone credits on Skype because he didn't have a Skype account. But you can just call. It's like 2 cents a minute or something. If you have credit on your Skype account. So it worked. We do whatever it takes. So you guys...
people what they want.
So are you guys ready to dazzle the listeners with some great stuff this week?
Dazzle. That's what I... that's just what I do, you know.
Right.
Breathe in, breathe out, dazzle. You know, just kind of... just kind of happens without even thinking about it.
Dazzling is kind of...
Yeah.
It's the normal thing that you do. Dazzle. So we're going to talk about some indie rock royalty this week, and then another band with kind of a comeback album, I think we'd call it. But Chris will tell us all about that.
Yeah, we're really going for the youth demographic tonight.
That's
we've got
right.
two artists over 50 years old, and then one that hasn't put out an album in 23 years.
So, well, we
know
do.
We know what Gen Z or Gen Y or whatever they are. We know what they want.
I think we're definitely catering to the aging rockers, but that's how it should be, because that's who we are.
Right.
Let's see.
Gotta be ourselves.
So I always know that when Chris comes on the podcast, we can look forward to some major music journalism and a deep dive into anything we decide to bring up. do you think Helen Reddy should get the jingle? I kind of think maybe not. Helen Reddy did
Helen
die.
Reddy?
Yeah.
Oh. That's too bad.
Did you not even read that, Chris?
I was unaware of it until this very moment, but...
Yeah.
She was R.I.P. Helen Reddy.
She was famous for the song I Am Woman, which even in the 70s, I kind of thought it was corny. And then she had a really kind of... Okay, this is really mean, but annoying pop hit called Delta Dawn. Do you guys remember that? You guys
I
are too young.
To play the whole thing.
You guys are too young. I have to play a little bit just to tell you guys, you know, explain what I'm talking about. So just hold on here. I'm
looking really not honoring her memory if we don't play the whole thing from front to back, honestly.
All right. I didn't play the jingle, but in the interest of music journalism, this is what she was most known for.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor, no one's ever gonna keep me down again. Whoa, yes,
guys know that? Do you guys even know that song?
Yeah, I think Jason covered that song in my life.
Jason covered that on his last his last EP. That's a Red Pants cover, right?
I'm proud to say she was born. Helen Rennie was born in Melbourne. Did you know that?
What?
I did not know that. Really?
Born in Melbourne.
Wow, it's incredibly topical.
I didn't know that.
Well, and then there was this one that I made a reference to, Delta Dawn.
Delta Dawn, what's that flower you have on? Could it be a faded rose from days gone by? And did I hear you say he wasn't meeting you here today to take you to his mansion in the sky? She's 41 and her daddy still calls her baby.
I guess it's basically country, but I thought of it as just pop. It was AM radio pop back then. I was playing those tracks from the Greatest Hits collection from 1975, but I think those songs were, God, it seems like they were late 60s. They could have been early 70s. Anyway, there you go. Helen Reddy.
Sorry, Helen. I think she was in my top five, like in 2016. Right next to like Bleached. Godspeed You Black Emperor. And she could have, like, Helen Reddy, and then Frank Ocean, I think.
She could have turned punk rock like Johnny Cash was starting to do, right? He was doing collaborations with young punkers when he got really old. I don't think Helen Reddy ever did that. All right, Chris, give us a 3-hour summary of your studies of the Ramones recently, and you can plug your podcast that you were on too.
Yeah, so there's a national podcast that's with National Review Magazine attached to them, and it's called Political Beats, and they ask politics people to go on there and talk about their favorite bands of all time. And probably more than 2 years ago, they asked me who I wanted to do, and this is right after I did the Pixies for them. And they asked again, and I said, I do the Ramones, and it came up this week. So I spent like 3 solid weeks studying the Ramones. I read 3 books about the Ramones, listened to all their albums. And so we talked about the Ramones for 3 hours on this podcast. So definitely go online, check it out. It's called Political Beats. And I think I declared them to be the greatest American band of all time.
Wow. I definitely would like to listen to that, but I have not found a free 3 hours. This is the last week's been a little crazy. Yeah.
All right. Let me make my case here. If you go to Rolling Stone, they obviously, and you'll hear more about this later, they have all these lists, and they have the greatest musical acts of all time. Ramones, they have at number 29. But if you parse that out a little bit in terms of just American bands, not American like individuals like Stevie Wonder or Chubby Checker or whoever, just American bands, they're number 3 behind Beach Boys and Velvet Underground. And so I think I'm on good standing saying, you know, they're definitely top 3, probably, depending on what you think about Rolling Stone lists. And I would put them ahead of Velvet Underground. So, you know, they're in the discussion. They're definitely very, very influential. If you listen to this podcast, I mean, how many of the bands that we talk about are, you know, have like the 3 chord thing, power pop punk, you know, that kind of sound that still persists today. You know, I was going back listening to some of the stuff that we listen to, and think now all I can think is, oh my God, this is a Ramones song. I mean, I'm listening to Charlie Bliss, I was listening to the song. I'm like, oh my God, that's a Ramones song. And then, you know, Colleen Green and, you know, kind of all these bands. And I'm some Ty Segall. I'm like, God, I can hear Joey Ramone playing these songs. So I've got Ramones on the brain, and it's not a bad thing. But definitely go check out the first album, which came out in 1976, which is the Ramones. I think Rolling Stone has that as the number 47 album of all time. And their third album, Rocket to Russia, is actually a better album. It doesn't get the credit that the other one does because it wasn't first. But I think it's actually a better album. And it's one of the greatest albums of all time. And if you don't like the Ramones, if you don't like their, you know, power pop punk, you know, they were they're largely credited with being the first ever punk band, even though, you know, the Stooges and, you know, other bands were around, MC5 and the New York Dolls, bands like that. They were the first one that really brought it nationwide and got parents really upset about it. I went back and I looked at a lot of newspaper clippings at the time. You know, there's this myth that, you know, as soon as Ramones came out, everybody loved them and they were like, oh my God, this new brand of music. But it actually scared the shit out of parents nationwide. If you go back and read some of these reviews, they were horrified at the Ramones, you know, in these little newspapers back when newspapers actually had, you know, their own reviewers for every newspaper. Now they pretty much just source it out to Pitchfork or whatever. But yeah, people are horrified at the Ramones, and it's funny to go back and look at those reviews now when everybody, you know, just reveres them as one of the greatest bands of all time. So that's my pitch. Go back, listen to at least the first four Ramones. After that, it gets a little dicey, but yeah, very, very influential, and you could definitely check them out.
When I was in high school, one of my good friends was just absolutely totally into the Ramones, and he was the only person in our high school friend group who was into the Ramones. So he's the Ramones guy, right? And he was completely just absolutely, and he even learned how to play guitar like Johnny Ramone. Like Johnny Ramone was his, you know, his basically his guitar hero. And he had a band, and he would play, and he would strum. You know, you don't when you're playing Ramones stuff, you don't strum both directions. It's all downward,
correct,
right? And
correct.
He would play, my friend Raman would play so fast that his hand would be a blur, you know? He yep. completely was modeled after Johnny Ramone. It was great. It was awesome.
Well, this is the criticism that they had at the time. It was like, oh, the Ramones, they only know two chords, and, you know, they don't know how to play their instruments. But, man, I've gone back, and if you can play the guitar, you can play the Ramones, which is kind of a cool thing. I mean, you can pretty much play anything that they do. But to play it in that Johnny Ramone style where it's everything is downstroke, there's no upstroke, you know, I tried doing that, and it just wears your wrist out.
Go completely.
You know, his right arm is probably twice as big as his left.
Yeah.
It's so hard. And so it's, yeah, so it's, and to play that fast. And,
right.
You know, kind of with giving yourself that you know, that disability as it is, just to not be able to upstroke, it's kind of amazing. And so now, you know, at the time they thought he couldn't play his guitar, and now he's regarded as one of the best guitarists of all time. So,
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20.
All right, you were going to mention also, because we had a discussion about this on our chat this week, that Rolling Stone redid the top 500 albums of all time. They just reworked it, right? They just decided, okay, we're changing the order now, which is
right,
sort
so
of funny, but I understand perceptions change, so I actually think that's a good thing. But then when you're calling them the top 500 of all time, they almost should just say our current ranking or whatever, because, you know, another 10 years from now it'll change again, right?
Yes. So, you know, Barrett's been doing the thing where he's counting down from 500 to 1 and listening to these albums based on the last list that came out, which is, I think, was 2013. And I started at 1 and was going down the other way. And then they go ahead and they redo the entire list. And so a lot of the, you know, like I was just talking about the Ramones, they were at 33 on the first list, the first Ramones album, and now they dropped to 47. I should be happy because Nirvana's Nevermind went from 17 to 6 in this new list. But there are some, like Ramones' Rocket to Russia was 106, I think, on the last list, and now it's 365 or something. I don't know. There are these huge swings because,
yeah,
you know, it's a whole new age demographic that's voting on this stuff now. And, you know, if you click through the list of people who have who are voters, like Snail Mail, what's the girl's name? Is Snail Mail? She's 21 years old.
Yeah,
she
Lindsay
was a voter
Jordan
for this.
Yeah.
Yes. Eva, is it Hendrix from Charlie Bliss? She's a voter. I think she's like 23 years old. Lily Trafiglio from Beach Bunny is a voter. Billie Eilish, who's 18 years old, and just did not know who Van Halen was. She is a voter. So, you know, you have these young people voting on the greatest albums of all time. When I was 18 years old, who knows what I would have voted for. So, So that's why you're going to have these wild swings, because you have these people who are barely cognizant of music at all the last time the list was made. So it's, it's interesting to see how the list shifts. The one thing I did notice is that there are a lot more African-American artists in the top 50. So I think they're probably getting their due from maybe past lists where there weren't as many, where Rolling Stone was kind of more white-centric. So I think they're correcting that a little bit. But the funniest story about this is that they figured out that Ad Rock from the Beastie Boys, who's, you know, in his 50s or whatever, all 50 of his albums, I guess 49 of his 50 albums that he turned in were completely made up. Like, he just made up the names of albums and sent them in. And the researchers are going through it and they're like, I've never heard of this album at all. And they look and they figure out that it's fake. So some of the albums that he turned in were Nothing But the Good Stuff by Grits and Gravy. My Suzuki Sierra is Bumpin' by the Strategic Orchestrations. Bump That Funky Bump by the Cosmonauts. What was the other one? Dr. Funkafunk's Out of Bounds on the Dance Floor. Juan Epstein's Boogaloo in Brooklyn. Juan Epstein, of course, was a character on Welcome Back, Kotter. So those are some of the albums that he turned in, and they figure out it was all fake, and so I guess they just completely threw his ballot out, but I thought that was pretty funny.
Pretty good. Yeah, well, I think I support the reworking of it. Although, I think, I guess, my bias would be, if you're really going to talk about best albums of all time, you probably should just have, you know, a lot more older people doing the voting, right?
You would think. I don't know, you know, it took me a long time to listen to, you know, a third of the albums on this list.
Yeah.
You know, so how can you really gauge? I mean, you can list your favorite albums. I mean, sure. But I wouldn't say that, you know, a lot of my favorite albums are the greatest albums of all time. I mean, there are albums that I like that I think I probably just like, but, you know, and nobody else does. So I just don't know if you're that young, how you put them into context.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, cool. It's good. It's fun. Well, are we ready?
Thoughts, Nick, Jason? I've dominated here.
Oh, here, Nick.
You're dominating in with such style.
I'd vote for Red Pants, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
I'd put them on the list. Next time.
Maybe in
2030 when I have a vote.
In 10 years, Red Pants will be at like number 483. He'll just barely crack it.
That's all I'm looking for.
As long as you're on the list, right? You won't demand like top 10.
I can remember being a teenager and standing in the newsagent and sort of like flicking through whether it was Rolling Stone or something else. You know, so this is, I guess, you know, like 30 years ago, there'd be these, you know, greatest albums of all time, or, you know, best 100 albums or whatever. And I remember there would always be like the top like three albums would be Beatles albums, and then the next two would be Led Zeppelin albums. And I remember really clearly as a teenager just thinking, oh, this is so stupid. It's always the Beatles that are number one. They should do these lists, but, you know, you're not allowed to vote for the Beatles. So that was my reaction as a teenager 30 years ago. I was just sort of sick of seeing the Beatles always being, you know, voted as, you know, creating the greatest albums of all time.
Well, so, for the first time, the Beatles were actually supplanted this time with number one was, what was it, like Sgt. Pepper's last time. Now this time it's Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. So the top Beatles comes in at number five, Abbey Road.
What? That's insane. Oh my gosh.
I think
canceled my subscription.
It must have gotten beaten out by a couple of Guided by Voices albums, right? That's, I'm sure.
Oh, surely, right? Does anybody know where they were?
Number two, Beach Boys' Pet Sounds. Number three, Joni Mitchell's Blue. Number four, Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life. Number five, Abbey Road. Six, Nirvana. Never mind. Seven, Fleetwood Mac's Rumors. Number eight, Prince and the Revolution, Purple Rain. Number nine, Bob Dylan, Blood on the Tracks. Number 10, Lauryn Hill's The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Mm, wow.
Say about that what you must.
Hmm. Where is, I remember.
One Beatles in the top 10.
This is maybe, you know, my rock bias showing, but I remember when, you know, a couple decades ago, maybe 3 decades ago when they would make lists like this, Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen would always be like way up there. So where does that one land on this list?
Oh, boy. Let's see. Beatles, Michael Jackson, Aretha Franklin, Rolling Stones, Public Enemy, The Clash, Kanye West.
Springsteen is really getting bumped. He's totally getting bumped.
Yeah, number 19. Kendrick Lamar, To Pimp a Butterfly, is number 19. Radiohead's Kid A, number 20. And here you go, 21. Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run, number 21. Yeah.
Was Kid A over OK Computer?
Yes, Kid A is number 20. OK Computer, I believe, is in the 60s somewhere.
Whoa, that's pretty wild. I feel like that's a big, that's pretty interesting.
Well, so Barrett was sharing with me, like, hey, I've listened to the from 450 to 500. Like, he's starting out at the bottom. And one of those in there that he really liked that he didn't expect to like was the Notorious B.I.G.'s Ready to Die. Mm-hmm. And on the new list, it's at number 22. So it was like 470 or something in the last list.
Oh, man.
And now it's number 22, a jump of,
I guess,
440.
It's aged really well in the last few years.
Wasn't the band, I thought the band was actually called the Notorious RBG. Is that not right?
No. Yes.
That's an obscure
Supreme Court.
That was an obscure rap album that she made. Not many people know about that.
Should she have gotten the death of the week? Or are we too late?
Yeah, we're too late.
It's been 2 weeks.
Plus, nobody
has
ever.
Has it been that long already?
I think it's been a couple weeks. Man. Yeah.
Everything is just blending together.
Time doesn't operate in a normal plane these days. All right, very good, very cool.
That's all the that's Chris complains for the week.
Let's go to the rock royalty. How about it, you guys?
Sounds good.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Time to talk about some new music. New music from old guys.
Right. So, I think we all, at some level, are Sonic Youth fans. Because if you're an indie rocker, how can you not be, right? I think so. Chris, maybe not so much, but I think Nicholas has been obviously in the more recent years. He's been the biggest proponent of all the former Sonic Youth people, and in particular, Thurston Moore. So when Thurston Moore comes out with an album, you got to talk to Nicholas about it, right?
Absolutely.
Well, I'm kind of laughing because I think he said that exact same thing like 2 years ago when his last album came out. So apparently I've got a reputation, but it's true. I do like Thurston Moore. I do like Lee Ronaldo as well, the other guitar player from Sonic Youth. Haven't really gotten into any of Kim Gordon's stuff. New Thurston Moore album has just come out. Thank you to you, Jason, for giving us all the heads up that it was released. And I guess we're going to talk about it.
We are.
Everyone listen to it?
Oh, yeah.
I have.
Who wants to start talking first?
I think you should, Nicholas.
Well, you were talking about people being over 50. Chris, Thurston was actually 62, which is kind of amazing. He's sort of still got that kind of boyish charm to him somehow, doesn't he? When I'm 62, I hope that I'm still making music and strumming my electric guitar and stuff like that. So it gives us all hope that, as you get older, you don't have to stop being cool. Anyway, this album's just come out. He's basically playing with the same people that he's played with for the last couple of years. He's got Steve Shelley from Sonic Youth playing drums on some of the tracks, at least. And it was produced by this guy called Paul Epworth, who also produced Thurston Moore's last album, Rock and Roll Consciousness, which we kind of had mixed feelings about. But he's kind of a famous producer. He's produced everybody from like U2 to Adele and stuff like that. But I heard an interview where Thurston Moore was talking about how he liked some stuff that he'd done with this other British band called the Pop Group. Anyway,
I saw the Pop Group live.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah, cool.
They did a comeback, and I had never heard of them. And it was actually really good. Yeah,
I'd never heard of them either. But Thurston Moore was talking about how he's friends with the guy in the Pop Group. And anyway, he's made this new album. And I'm sure we've all got different things to say about it. Maybe we should just start off with one of the tracks.
We should.
Am I allowed to jump in first? Is that okay?
You are. Yep.
This song got lots of love hearts from me, so let's just go straight into it. This is track 4 called Siren.
Do you think we should cut in kind of late in the song where when he starts the vocals to come in like 9 minutes?
Well, you could do whatever you like.
That was my idea. So I'm going to I'm not stealing your track. I'm just stealing where we start your track.
Do it.
I had also like noted that 8 minutes and 10 seconds was a good starting point for this song. Oh,
great minds think alike. I think I had that 8:10 in my head too. So let me find it. Here we go.
Well, the album is called By the Fire, and I think we mentioned that before. New Thurston Moore album. I've got something to say about the first track on the album, and but you know, overall, I really love this album. I guess that's my sweeping statement.
So that was a 12-minute track that we started at about 8 minutes, but it just obviously lets it take a long time to unfold. But in that particular track, most of it is that sort of vibe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are other tracks where it's like crazy noise followed by a quiet part, followed by some more crazy noise. And I found it to be a little bit, you know, challenging, I guess, to,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so long. It's an hour and 22 minutes, I think. So I started off by thinking, okay, this is Thurston Moore being kind of experimental, like a lot of the Sonic Youth albums were, you know, and that's cool because that's sort of who he is. But then the other part of me was like, man, could I have edited this down to a really great 40-minute album? So I could kind of go both either way on it, I guess. But yeah.
So this kind of caught me at an interesting time because in doing my Ramones research, I found this old movie called 1991, The Year Punk Broke. I don't know if any of you have actually seen this.
Oh, it sounds familiar.
It's basically just like a concert documentary where some guy follows Thurston Moore around Europe as they're playing these shows with like Nirvana and the Ramones and other groups. And it's basically just like the whole thing is just Thurston Moore stoned out of his mind, just like rambling on and on. And it's kind of insufferable. I was like, how long do I actually want to watch this? And so when I heard that there was a new Thurston Moore album, I was like, I'll give it a try. And much to my dismay, I actually sort of like this album. I was ready to not, but I really do. So can I pick a song?
Sure.
All right. I believe this is also another one of the longer songs, but I don't care where you drop in. Just number three, Breath.
Had to let it play.
It's getting good
till the noise part came on. Yeah, that's Thurston Moore from the album By the Fire.
I'm not bothered at all that that it's mostly instrumental. So,
oh, that was great.
I believe there are lyrics that kick in later, right?
Yeah, I think about midway through or something. He's sort of this master of doing these 5 to 10 minute passages that are instrumental, and then coming in with like a little bit of vocals in the last few minutes of the song.
Yeah,
I like it a lot. It's a good vibe.
I almost sort of expected him to go, after putting out an album that was three songs that were each an hour long or something like that.
Yeah, it was
like that last album, I thought okay, we're gonna get really short pop songs this time around, but
yeah,
no, we've got another hour and a half worth of music. Which, as I'm probably just as big of a fan as Nicholas is, so this is, I'm in heaven this week listening to this new album and trying to take it all in. There's just it's just a lot to process this week.
Yeah, it is. Well, Jason, why don't you make the next pick?
Okay, I'm gonna go a little bit more rockin'. There's some really nice slower. Like, there's a couple of songs where it's just seems like vocals and electric guitar, but I'm going to go the opposite of that and go with Cantaloupe.
Mm-hmm. restless day, we fed you a star, a glowing mirror inside of a spoon. Tiny sun dancing like a raw egg, reflections of you, soft and blue, girl. We're pulsing blue, blue to orange, dripping fire music down your back, floating up through your skin, white gardenias in your eyes. Day, we drew streaks of lightning on your telly. Fingers drip, dipped in paint of cantaloupe and licorice. We're pulsing blue, blue to orange, dripping fire music down your back, floating up through your skin, white gardenias in your eyes.
Just when that guitar solo was starting to fire up, I had to fade it out. I felt bad. But
Nicholas,
yeah.
Do you think that that's James Seward? Is that his name?
I think so. Isn't there some crazy story like he met him in an apartment building and they were like living in the same apartment building? Yeah, it was crazy random thing. Yeah.
But that doesn't seem like Thurston's style of playing.
Right, right. That solo. You're right. You're right.
I just think he's put together a really great group of Chris said his computer just died. Really great group of musicians, and they're really coming together, I think, on this album here.
Yeah, and the bass player is Deb Googe from My Bloody Valentine, right?
Yeah, and she sings a little bit, I think, here and there, at least on one song that I remember, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's great. I think there's four of us, so we can pick four, right? What do you think?
Go for it.
Nicholas, do we have permission? We didn't lose Nicholas too, did we?
I don't know.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you now. Yep.
Sorry, my little earphone plug came out a little bit. It was probably the best thing for all the listeners anyway.
Wow. They needed a break. They needed a break from Nicholas.
Yeah. You guys said everything that I was going to say anyway about these guitar players and band members. Yeah, totally. So you're nailing it, everyone. It's lots of fun on this album. Sorry, you just asked me a question. Were you talking about choosing another song? What were you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Since you have domain over this album. I was requesting permission to play a track.
You're gonna choose one.
I am. I'm gonna choose one.
I feel like I'm drunk or something like that. All right, you choose one. You do it.
And Chris is gonna call us back. So he'll probably call us
back. Chris is back.
He's back already.
Oh, he's in.
All right, beautiful.
I snuck back in.
Did you have a catastrophic failure of your equipment?
I got the full-on blue screen of death. Yes. But I'm back.
Thought maybe Ron Swanson toppled on top of you or something.
This is the second time this has happened during our podcast. I got to maybe your guys' takes are too hot for my computer.
That must be what it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. This is an album where it's completely justified to play track one, right? Because I think it really, it's a good encapsulation of the Thurston Moore sound. So let's play a bit of that one. Number one, Hashish. Thank you.
effect of this dose. It's indigo, yeah, my repose.
Don't you think that's just classic Thurston Moore guitar playing?
100%.
Totally.
I mean, that's like,
I'm kind of glad that you chose that. Sorry. I'm cutting you off, Jason, but you go. But I'm glad you chose that song. We'll come back to my comments in a moment.
Jason. I realized I said 100%, which is a very which is a Thurston Moore song.
Right, yeah. So. Sonic Youth song. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't, Nicholas, did you get like echoes of the song Sunday? Like the old Sonic Youth song? I don't know if anybody else is familiar with that song.
When I heard that as the first track, I kind of got a bit annoyed, to be honest, because I was like, he's basically just repeating himself now, because this sounds exactly like a Sonic Youth song, and I can't quite put my finger on it. And I kind of was thinking, wow, you know, maybe you get to sort of Thurston Moore's level and his point in his career, and he doesn't really care if, you know, he writes a song that sounds, you know, so similar to something that he's recorded 10 or 15 years before. I was thinking it was sounded like the song called Rain on Tin.
It definitely has sort of that Murray Street song, like Nurse era vibe, which is kind of like my favorite of theirs. So I've kind of gave him a pass on it. I've given him a pass on this song sounding so familiar and the album being so long, just because I love him so much. I almost cannot criticize the man.
Okay, this is like a CNN. I'm going to do a live fact check. Ready? Here we go. Here's a little bit of Rain on Tin. Okay, here's Sunday. Well, you know, neither of those are like carbon copy type things. But the vibe is there for sure.
Yeah,
I thought that was a good example of me, you know, not really knowing what I'm talking about. I think you get the prize, Jason, for the one that actually sounds like it. I think it was. It's also we didn't quite get to the bit where he's singing. It was kind of the melody that was kind of a really similar element. But, you know, listeners, don't ever be fooled that because I may be sound confident that I actually know what I'm talking about, because I don't. Clearly, I don't.
I like Will playing the role of, like, debate moderator and jumping in there with the instant fact check.
It's good.
That's why I keep
keeping us straight.
That's why I keep cutting off Nicholas when he interrupts something. Wait a minute, Nicholas.
I wanted to follow up on what you were saying before, Chris, when, you know, you were talking about Thurston Moore being a little insufferable, which isn't a flattering term, but, you know, I love his music. When I listen to him being interviewed, I kind of, there's part of me that, you know, loves how dedicated he is to his art. But I guess there's another part of me that just thinks, oh, he's kind of a bit of a wanker. And it's hard to kind of get away from him when you hear him being interviewed. And I thought, oh, how would it be different, you know, if you didn't, like, I feel like I know too much about him, you know, I can't ever forget. You know, I kind of, I'm always thinking, oh, I wonder what Kim Gordon thinks of his new album and do they ever listen to each other's music and blah, blah, blah. But, like, if I knew nothing about him, if he was some just, like, reclusive artist and he just put out a new album every year and no one ever interviewed him or really knew what he looked like or knew anything about his personal life or his marriage or anything like that, would you kind of think slightly differently about it? And I reckon you just... it's probably best just to focus on the music and don't pay attention to him as a person. That's my thought, that maybe I know a bit too much about him and maybe he's a bit like me. He just talks a bit too much and just focus on the music. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I feel like just listening to him sometimes, I feel like he's a great historian for music side of things. Like I remember seeing, I think it was the Chelsea Light Moving tour, and he was talking a lot, and but he was telling me all these great stories, and I had friends in the crowd that were, you know, would just say shut up and play, and I was, you know, to me I felt like I was at like a music history class. He's maybe not made some of the best life choices, but I don't know, there's a lot of that in rock and roll, I'm sure.
One of the things that I learned many years ago is never learn very much about the private lives of your heroes. Like I read Charles Cross's Heavier Than Heaven about Kurt Cobain, and he was kind of a wretched human being, if we're being honest. And just in researching the Ramones here in the last few weeks, boy, Johnny Ramone was a real awful human being. I mean, he was just terrible. Joey, not great either. Had problems with alcohol and some problems occasionally, you know, putting his hands on women. But yeah, it's, you're really better off just kind of listening to the music a lot of times, I think. And the music, I look, you know, in 2007, Thurston Moore came out with Trees Outside the Academy, which I really liked. And there's not a lot of long songs on there. That was more, I think he's probably figured he's kind of been there, done that with the, you know, shorter, you know, poppier, more melodic songs. So I think he's trying to break out of that now. But I like it.
Yeah, and look, I just want to acknowledge I guess I'm a bit jealous of Thurston Moore because he's one of these people that's never really kind of sold out in a way. You know, that could be debatable, but like he just kind of does his thing, and he's well respected and still makes what I think is great music. So you know, there's a lot to be said for that. So you know, if I could be anyone, I'd love to be Thurston Moore. I'd love to have his career.
Yeah, who's still making great albums at age 62? Yeah.
Right.
There aren't very many.
Yeah, and challenging albums and not, you know, the stereotype, which is that everything gets kind of watered down and boring and uninspired. And that certainly has not happened in Thurston Moore's case.
Totally. Still rocks. Still rocks hard.
All right.
He still just writes great music anyway. Sorry, go on.
We're going at a slow pace according to all the stuff we have to cover. But it'll all be worthwhile. It'll all be worthwhile. So let's go to the next member of rock and roll or indie rock royalty. Bob Mould. There's a new Bob Mould album. It's fun whenever there's a new Bob Mould album, I think, especially if it's good. So it's rock, and it's the current band that he's had now for, probably close to 10 years, right? He's got Jason Narducci on bass and John Worster, also of Superchunk, on drums. And those guys know how to rock. You know, it's three guys, and they've been playing together for a while, and I think Bob writes all the songs. That's why it's called a Bob Mould album, and probably appropriately so. But the band is great, and somehow I kind of feel like he's been doing kind of the same thing musically, but I don't know how he really pulls it off to keep it sounding fresh. I don't know. Maybe it's not fresh to a lot of people, but a lot of the songs on this album, I just hear them and I'm like, yeah, he kind of nailed it again. So I have some instructions for the listeners. I'm going to introduce this song, and I think you should, whatever you're listening on, you should turn it up to absolutely maximum volume. Just crank it and get ready for this. Number 7, Siberian Butterfly. I state my case. No, no further discussion necessary.
The defense rests?
Yep. Yeah. That's
so
rocking.
I listened to this once, and I can say for sure that Bob Mould does one thing really, really well, and that's this album is that. Like, I mean, it definitely sounds like a Bob Mould album. That song you just played, I think, is a standout. A lot of it sounds like a lot of other Bob Mould albums. So, again, I'm terrible at just listening to an album once and gleaning a lot from it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I'll listen to it more and get more from it. But, yeah, I mean, this is definitely what he does well. And so I don't have a song to pick if anybody else wants to jump in.
I think, Jason, you would have a pick, right?
No, I don't. I listened to it maybe two or three times at the beginning of the week, and then Chris mentioned like what he wanted to listen to, and that sort of took over, and so I didn't like actually write down a track that I had a pick for. Like my overall impression was that, because I'm not really familiar with Bob Mould, and I'm actually not like super familiar with Husker Du even, like their discography, but I just kind of realized that like Dave Grohl has kind of made a career off of Bob Mould's sound. Am I wrong in assuming that? It sounds very
similar.
Okay.
That's a fair statement.
Now that I've insulted Dave Grohl, I can turn over my pick to somebody else.
I can keep playing them, but
on that Foo Fighters thing. Oh, sorry, I'm talking over you, Will.
Let's turn it over to Nicholas then. Otherwise, you just listen to me play DJ on Bob Mould.
We'll listen to another track in a minute, but yeah, look, I totally got a kind of a Foo Fighters. Like if you replace Bob Mould's voice with Dave Grohl's voice, it would just sound like a Foo Fighters track. And, you know, a few months ago I compared the Beths. I was sort of saying, oh, well, what makes them so different to, like, Taylor Swift? And you could sort of say that about this. You know, you could say, oh, what makes this so different than the Foo Fighters? And, you know, you can answer that for yourselves. But it's interesting, isn't it, how similar don't know, some things can sound on one level and they've got completely different levels of popularity. But I think Dave Grohl really loves Bob Mould, because this band has actually been on tour in the last few years with the Foo Fighters, like opening up for them. So there's obviously a bit of a connection there. And they totally rock. You know, there was a, you know, if you look up any of their live, you know, performances online, they just totally smash it out. So, you know, Bob Mould's 59, but a lot of energy coming out from this guy, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's a definite lineage there. I mean, with Husker Du in the early 80s coming out, Land Speed Record and Metal Circus and all that kind of stuff, definitely, you know, influenced Nirvana, and then therefore Dave Grohl, who was in Nirvana and then in the Foo Fighters, and now we're back to Bob Mould playing music that sounds like Foo Fighters. So there's definitely intertwined there.
I found it hard to listen to this album, though. I think he, you know, if I was standing listening to it live, it would be totally awesome and overwhelming in an amazing and rocking kind of way. But I feel like at home, it's like, I just can't listen to like an angry guy shouting at me when I'm, you know, making noodles in the kitchen. I'm happy to choose a track. I kind of want to choose the first track, actually, even though it's really totally different to everything else. I do really kind of love the first song. It's sort of the only acoustic song. But I saw an interview with Bob Mould, and he was sort of talking about this first song was, you know, it's kind of his sort of saying what he does, which is literally putting his heart on his sleeve. So maybe if that's okay, we'll listen to the song that's non-representative of the rest of the album. Track one, Heart on My Sleeve.
Bob Mould. I think
he always sounds like he believes what he's singing. And yeah, I love that.
Definitely does. Yeah, it's interesting how there's a subtlety of like you're saying, like you don't necessarily want to hear a guy like shouting at you. It's interesting to me how what a subtle difference in like a vocal delivery can have on how you interpret something. Because I think if you made Dave Grohl the singer of this, I would like it way, way less. Maybe it's just with the history going back with Bob Mould. There's something about his sort of snarly, loud singing that I just connected with at some point. And I love the way he mixes it, too. He always mixes it so that the guitar is so loud that it sounds like he's just having to just scream to keep up with it, right? Which I've always been a fan of that, where like the vocals aren't like completely out in front. They're like they're having to fight with the guitar. So
But it's interesting. Like he, you know, if you compare him to Thurston Moore, where Thurston Moore will have like a 5-minute instrumental introduction and then a bit of vocals, there's not a lot of music without vocals on this album and Bob Mould's music generally, it seems.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
It seems like the vocals are really important, because when you look at the video clips that he's made, he's always printing the lyrics in really these big bold words on the screen. So it seems like the words seem to be a real, like, that I get the feeling that that's really important to him, what he's saying. So it's just kind of an interesting that it seems like, even though the guitars are really loud and you're talking about him sort of shouting over them, it's kind of like, sounds like he places a bit of an emphasis on what the lyrics are actually saying, and his sort of voice being an important part of the, you know, the message of the music, if that kind of makes sense what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think so. His last album was Sunshine Rock, which is maybe my favorite album of his, and had more of a positive attitude in the lyrics, and musically a little bit more. It's still the same, you know, rockin' Bob Mould, but a little more sort of optimistic. And this one, he just said, "I'm pissed off," and so he's really pissed off on this album, but in an earnest way. So
yeah, that song I think is kind of embarrassing. I'm sorry. it's almost like a.
You think it's too much?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's almost like a caricature of like a protest song. Like he could be singing that in the 60s or something. I don't know. It's just so upfront and overt. I don't know. It's the one song on the album I don't like.
All right.
I'm glad you all like it.
All right. Let's play another rockin' track.
Thank you.
I've got it down to a couple, but I think let's just go right up to number 2, because this one completely rocks. Next Generation. Bob Mould. The album is called Blue Hearts, and it's rocking, and there you go. All right, well, that's it. People will know if they decide to listen to that further. I recommend it. Got some mixed reviews from the other podcasters here, but that's cool. Chris has another, boy, I guess indie rock veterans, right, just given their age. This is a band that I haven't really listened to much. It's just one of those bands that you hear of, and they're from Champaign, Illinois, home of REO Speedwagon, right?
REO Speedwagon from down south, or are they from Rockford, or are they up north somewhere?
Champaign.
I don't know. I forget.
Champaign, Illinois.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good for REO Speedwagon.
I went to Champaign a year ago for a disastrous football game, and there's a street in Champaign that's been renamed, or maybe it was renamed originally. I don't know. REO Speedwagon Way, or something like that. Yeah, it's terrible. It's kind of embarrassing. But
well, that's fitting because this band sounds exactly like REO Speedwagon.
Right.
They're basically the bastard sons of REO Speedwagon. No, they were a big hit back in 1995, back in the indie scene during my college years, which it's a long time ago. But they had the album "You'd Prefer an Astronaut," which had the song "Stars" on it, which was a big like MTV hit. And then they had the album they came out with 2 years later, "Downward Is Heavenward," was even better. It was like one of my favorite albums of the 90s. But then they just completely disappeared. 23 years, they just went silent. And then back in now in 2020, they're back with an album. And I wasn't hoping for much, but I really like it. It's got these kind of long, slow, really guitar riff heavy echoey songs. I don't want to call it like dreamy, but you know, there's a lot of echo, and then they have other guitars that are just kind of playing above everything else, and it's really bass heavy. And if you've got like a big bass speaker in my car and you turn it up a lot, then it just like rattles your windows and your fillings. And that's the effect that I enjoy quite a bit. So let's just give it a whirl here. I'll go with number 5, which is called "The Summoning."
Did we forget to name the band? Like to say that we're talking about Hum? I think we did.
Oh, yes. The band is called Hum.
And the album is called Inlet. That's Hum. The new album is
very
Inlet.
Like very metal, isn't it? Is that like what metal sounds like?
You know, like, some people describe them as shoegaze. They're like
slowcore metal.
They're like hard shoegaze, right? There were bands classified as shoegaze that were more of the, you know, atmospheric, and then there were some that were more like wall of sound, which is the end of the spectrum that this is on, right?
Well, I like how different the vocals are than, I guess, most metal bands, and I kind of feel like that's what makes them sort of sound. Like, the music's very metal, but the vocals are definitely. I thought they even sometimes sound a bit like the Red House Painters or something like that, you know. So it's kind of nice to have something that's a non-metal vocals over something as sludgy and grindy as that.
The site Stereogum described this as space rock.
Yes.
I'm not sure if I agree with that, but I don't know if I know what space rock is anyway. But
well, you're the shoegaze expert.
Yeah.
What's its shoegaze rating?
Well, that's what I said. You know, it's like the hard side of shoegaze. Like there was a band called Swerve Driver. Remember them? They were like the harder side of shoegaze.
Yeah.
And then there's that. And you know, I guess. I guess My Bloody Valentine. They're really loud, but in a different way.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. There's definitely some moments on at least one of the tracks on this Hum album that reminded me of My Bloody Valentine, like a kind of a slightly heavier version, but it's even a bit like some kind of newer prog metal bands musically, like I guess an artist like Devin Townsend, or there's an Australian metal band called The Amity Affliction, and they have that real low, slow, thick guitar kind of sound. And that's great.
It's almost how like the Melvins played back in the early 90s. This is definitely like an early 90s sound. And I love the guitars that almost kind of, you know, there's definitely there's a huge bottom on this with the bass.
Yeah.
But then you also have the guitars that almost sound like violins to some point, just the way that they're affected like that. And Godspeed You Black Emperor does that a lot, which is why they're one of my favorite bands, just because I just love that tonal, the way they tone the guitars like that.
Well,
I can see from their Wikipedia page that they formed in 1989, which is it's a long time ago. I mean, I was listening to Bon Jovi and Poison at the time, you know, when the seeds of Hum were being forged or planted. So it's interesting how these things develop. Hey,
yeah,
they didn't have an album for 6 years after that, so they worked at it a long time before they even got an album deal.
Nicholas or Jason, do you guys have a track to pick?
Yeah, I've got one. Oh, yeah. Sorry. You can go, Nicholas.
You go, Jason.
Okay. I had like the, I don't know if it's a single, but it was like 4 minutes compared to everything else being 8 or 9 minutes. Which one was that? I'm sorry. It was a Step Into You.
That's kind of topical because I think if you put James Hetfield on the vocals, you just almost could have a Metallica song there, right?
Or if you, I feel like the guitars are like really kind of poppy and catchy, but they like, they must run it through like some sort of gigantic sludge fest machine that just makes it so heavy.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see that pedal board. I want to know what's going on.
It's just a single pedal called the sludge machine. Yeah, no, I think it's a great contrast the way he sings in kind of just kind of this really straightforward way, and there's this super heavy thing going on behind him.
Yeah, and the drums are pretty like poppy in that song too, but like a lot of it, like the drums are like really, really heavy, but they're kind of dry, and it's just it's a super interesting combination all over the album.
Their last album isn't that sludgy. Like, it's a lot more pop songs. It's a lot, the songs are a lot tighter and a little more upbeat. Whereas, I don't know, in the last 23 years, they must have been a real downer for them.
Yeah, they've gotten angry.
Or they just miss it, you know?
How do we feel about taking 23 years off? I mean, on the one hand, you have 23 years to write songs, so maybe they should be good. But on the other hand, maybe you've like, you know, you got a job at a bank or something and you're off, you know, doing other stuff and you've completely lost interest. And I think this is impressive to get back on the wagon like this.
Or you could be just raising kids and have a family and like not putting any time into songwriting or anything. And
I'm
then,
waiting for the next Dolphins in Disguise.
Could
How
happen.
Many years has that been? 30 years?
1985. So that would be 35 years. Yeah. Just think what the indie rock press would do with that, the first Dolphins in Disguise album in 35 years. Yeah.
Will's band better get the exclusive.
Yeah. I think it would be pretty easy to get that one.
And we need to build the sludge machine pedal first for you.
The Sludge-O-Matic 8000. Yeah.
Sludge-O-Matic. Yeah, yeah. All right, well, I listened to this only one time because I was overburdened with assignments musically and otherwise. It's a busy week, so I can't do justice to a pick. So it's either to Nicholas or back to Chris.
Did we hear the last track, Shapeshifter? We haven't listened to that yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
Well, I put a little love heart next to this one, and I write down huge and dreamy. So, you know, when something gets a love heart and a description of huge and dreamy, I reckon we've got to share it with the listeners. This is, the final track on the album, Shapeshifter.
The skies and the sand. I remember your face.
That's Hum. The new album is Inlet.
Definitely dreamy.
Dreamy and loud. It's an interesting combination, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that track was probably a good example of maybe, like, I don't know, you know, Mark Kozelek, the vocalist of Red House Painters and Sun Kill Moon that we've talked about before. You know, if you put like a single acoustic guitar under that vocal, it's almost, you know, it's almost, it could almost make sense in that way.
Agreed. It's almost just kind of like conversational.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice pick, Chris. I love it. It's like 2 days before we're going to record, and Chris is like, oh, I'll talk about the Hum album. Well, thanks for giving us time to research it. But no, it's great. We gotta do this. Anytime anybody wants to just throw something out there, we got to do it. So very cool. Very good. The pride of Champaign, Illinois, other than REO Speedwagon, is Hum.
I might have REO Speedwagon on my top 10 at the end of the year. So
you could. They're probably due for a new album. Think how terrible that would be.
Yeah, maybe they're going to hear this Hum album and they're going to come back with something super dark.
Oh my God, it would just be really
bad. You
got to
get on this guitar pedal. I think we're missing out on a fortune. Like bands that take a break and come back. This could be a huge racket.
Yeah, the ad is. Has everybody forgotten about your band? Here's the remember what we used to sound like pedal.
Yeah. All right. This was really fun. Great combination. Fun to get four of us, I think. And I'm going to dare say that we hit above the $0 mark once again.
Thanks like for being a great moderator.
Yeah. I was just going to scream at Jason the entire time while you tried to moderate.
That's right. Like about 6 seconds into the answer, you start screaming.
That is an American politics.
Oh my God!
Reference there. For the non-American.
For this week especially, it was really nice to have these nice droney long songs from both Thurston Moore and Hum to listen to sort of just put everything else that's going on in this country away.
Yeah, it's not good.
The Hum album is almost like a sonic pillow where you just like lay your head down on the tracks and listen to the Sludge-O-Matic 8000.
All right, well, we have more music to talk about, more in the pipeline. We will not have a problem discussing more new music, and probably only about 497 of the Rolling Stone top 500 we haven't talked about yet, right? So
we'll do them one by one.
Reaching back into the vault will never be a problem. God, I've ever since we started doing some of these vault selections, I have periodically, you know, had in my head, oh my God, I got to talk about that one. You know, it's there's so many of them. It's great. Like anytime we can, it's so easy to come up with stuff. So. Very fun. Jason, you just put out a 10-year reissue, right?
Well, I just I literally just put the same CD back on Bandcamp because I had some in my basement. So I put up a video though. I went through a bunch of old hard drives and sort of scoured YouTube for footage that friends had filmed 10 years ago around the time that I put out an album under a different band name. So I put together a little montage video of me looking 10 years younger and slimmer. So it was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's cool. That's great. Yeah. Well, you can't beat my 35-year-old release because you were barely born, but that's oh yeah.
Oh,
that's fun.
Mid-80s I was born. I was rocking and rolling.
Well, yeah, but you know, just barely. You probably would have listened to Dolphins in Disguise if I sent you a cassette back then, right?
For sure.
When you were
five
or whatever.
It's because everybody was.
Oh, all right. Thanks, you guys.
You're like Spandau Ballet.
Oh yeah. Oh man, they had a.
You're like the Thompson twins.
I kind of have a soft spot for Spandau Ballet and the Thompson Twins. I really do. Yeah, there's some, like, some, you know, late teen to college years memories tied in with some of those songs. Yeah. Now you got me all nostalgic. I'm just going to sit here for a moment.
Yeah, we'll wait. We got all the time in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, thanks. Chris, any update on the Brewers? Anybody score yet?
0-0.
All right. This could be
third
the
inning.
Sports update. This could be the last game of the season for the Brewers, unless they somehow win, then they get another game. So
could be.
They have two hits, and the Dodgers have zero because Brandon Woodruff apparently is finding the strike zone. It's an important thing to do. All right, thank you, guys, and stay in touch. And Chris, I fully expect you to be on board for the album you're studying this week that I'm going to study for next week. So I'm gonna try to get you on. What do you think?
Am I studying
a bit? Stuff.
What album am I studying?
We can't say. We got to surprise
right.
the listeners.
Right. The one I know that, what it is now.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Okay, we'll do that, and then we'll add one or two and. It's going to be great, right?
Aren't they always?
Well, yeah, they are. But we got to take credit one at a time. All right. We will talk to everyone once again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.